Okay, everybody, welcome back once again to Tech Gumbo. I'm Haggai Davis II, along with Haggai Davis III, and we'd like to welcome you to Tech Gumbo. Here on our show, we like to talk about the past, present, and future of all things technology in a topical, interesting, and digestible way. Without geek speak or a bunch of acronyms, we just want to talk about technology that's important to us and important to you.
We also want to thank Cardinal Capital. To business owners and CEOs, hopefully you have a good relationship with your lender. Even if you do, sometimes you face other challenges, such as a need to consolidate debt, a want to level out your cash flow, or a desire to buy new equipment because you're in growth mode. If this describes you, give Cardinal Capital a call, whatever your need or challenge. They have over 4,000 lenders where they source commercial capital for business clients. Chris, Gary, and Rob at Cardinal Capital have a passion for business, and they want you to succeed. When you meet with Cardinal Capital, they get to know you and your business, so they can present your needs to a lending institution that will best fit your unique situation. In short, they go after money for your business. They translate your business into what's important for lenders, and they are good at it. Depending upon what the deal is, no matter how complicated or straightforward, they will help maximize your profitability while setting your business up for success. They find the best solution for your situation, all while being fun and easy to deal with. For more detailed information, visit their website at cardinalcap.net. You can also call them 225-308-3700 or email them info@cardinalcap.net.
Okay, Mr. Davis, let's get started with some tech gumbo today.
I'm excited.
Start off with the news and updates. Apple once again finds itself going to court for multiple reasons. This start with the one from the Justice Department.
Yes, the U.S. Justice Department has filed a very large antitrust lawsuit against Apple, saying that Apple has used its power in a lot of different places to build a moat around its software so that if you are a user on Apple Island, you cannot leave.
They're alleging that the tech giant made it very difficult for competitors to integrate the iPhone, and ultimately it raises the prices on consumers. So in a court in New Jersey, they're saying that Apple tries to keep users from switching to devices outside of its operating system. Well, no kidding.
Yeah, Apple literally said, this lawsuit threatens who we are and the principles that set Apple products apart in fiercely competitive markets. So Apple's basically saying, yes, we know we prevent people from leaving. That's what we do. And so the problem is that that appears to be illegal. And the Justice Department has pointed out several specific instances here. It's not just that they are shaking their fists broadly. There's a couple things. One of them is the iMessage to other forms of messaging. That's not new, and Apple is currently losing the lawsuit on that in Europe as well. Apple also intentionally makes other peripheral devices worse and harder to use, such as if you have a Samsung smartwatch or you have other headphones. Those just don't work as well as the Apple Watch or the Apple AirPods. Other things such as the ability to do cloud gaming. So one of the things that Apple believes is a key differentiator for its product is the fact that the iPhone is a very powerful piece of hardware. And so if you're going to play a game, they want the game to run on the iPhone, where there's an entire class of game that run on the server somewhere else, and you can just play it on a cheap piece of hardware. And so Apple, being afraid of that, has intentionally blocked those from their app store. These are all the types of anti-competitive behaviors that the Justice Department is saying are illegal and monopolistic.
The Justice Department saying that Apple's blocking the super apps is keeping the iPhone users locked into their ecosystem. And super apps incorporate a whole lot of mini apps into a single app. And the WeChat is a good example where you can do, you know, messaging, digital payments, and social networking in an all-in-one environment. But Apple doesn't like that. And so they're trying to prevent that from being a thing in the iPhone environment, but they're going to lose.
And it's also important to note that Apple's lost other antitrust lawsuits. We talked a lot a few years back about the Apple versus Epic Games lawsuit, wherever Apple prevented developers from creating their own internal payment stores, and Apple said that Apple had to take a 30% commission on any in-app transactions, and Epic Games ultimately ended up winning that lawsuit. Another thing that Apple does is that they force you to use the Apple wallet. You cannot use the Google wallet, you cannot use any other digital wallet. So for example, let's say that your bank wanted to set up a wallet, a digital wallet, and that your bank would offer you, you know, maybe 1% cash back if you were to use the bank's wallet. Well, Apple does not allow that to happen, whereas on a Google device, on the Android device, that can happen. And so these are just all the things that Apple locks down. And Apple says these are for security reasons, but a lot of times that claim also just does not hold up to scrutiny.
Another example is the USB-C ports now on the iPhone 15s that Apple for years and years and years said, oh no, we can't do that. We have to use our Lightning port. So people would have to buy the Lightning cables. And all of a sudden the iPhone 15 comes out and it's got USB-C on it. So Apple's doesn't have a good track record here of trying to keep everything inside their own ecosystem. And now they're being faced with another class action lawsuit over the AirTags.
Right. So this one isn't antitrust. This is more an anti-stalker lawsuit. So this is a lawsuit that is claiming that Apple did not do enough to prevent the AirTag from being used as a stalking device.
The plaintiffs in this case are saying that Apple has been warned about the dangers that AirTags pose and the fact that the AirTags have become the weapon of choice of stalkers and abusers. And Apple is saying, hey, we're not responsible for how these AirTags are being used. This class action lawsuit is kind of calling BS on that.
To be fair to Apple, though, they're not the only company facing this type of lawsuit. Tile, the maker of a very similar device, is also facing a very similar lawsuit. And the idea here is that it would be pretty easy to implement features which would make stalking with this type of hardware much harder. If someone was suddenly traveling with a AirTag or with a Tile that was not related to them in any way, and it happened for more than 24 hours, you could just show them a notification. Hey, we've noticed that this AirTag started following you at this location and is still following you. Do you know this AirTag? And if you say, oh, no, I don't, report something is wrong, then there you go. That's a really easy feature to implement. That's not that hard. And that's just something you can come up with in 30 seconds. If Apple had an entire team of developers taking months or years to think about how to bake in protections to these things, I'm sure they could come up with something better.
Moving along from Apple, let's go look over at what's going on with SpaceX and their Starlink cellular options.
So this is actually pretty cool that the FCC is saying that SpaceX now has permission to test a cellular system in very small locations, only a few places so far. But right now, Starlink can only be used for computer internet connections, but that they are testing the ability to also have your phone connect to the Starlink system as well.
So we've talked about it in the past, how T-Mobile has been testing with Starlink for about a year, and the FCC has granted the Starlink permission to reduce the altitude that some of their satellites are at to cut down the latency for cellular communications. It's currently being tested in California, Texas, and Hawaii is the only three places where this is being tested right now. The idea is that if you're out in the middle of nowhere, there's not a cell site somewhere nearby, hey, maybe you can still make a phone call on using Starlink. That's a great idea.
Oh, I agree. And I think it's also much more feasible because the amount of data that you need to make a phone call or receive a text message or receive an emergency alert that a flash flood is coming, those are all tiny little sips of data as opposed to the fire hose that it takes to run your computer or run a business. So that seems actually very plausible and a great use of this technology.
As Starlink puts up more and more of their satellites, I think they're close to 6,000 satellites. They're looking for more and more ways to make this work. I'm very excited about the continued potential that Starlink provides.
Someone who is no longer continuing something, though, General Motors has quit sharing driver data with data brokers. After that story last week from the New York Times that we talked about, General Motors has said, oh, we're going to pull the plug on that project.
They're going to stop sharing the driving behavior that people with OnStar in their cars has been doing. They've been selling this information back to the insurance companies. People have had their car insurance going up because these insurance companies are going, hey, you drive that way, you're more of a risk than we thought so. GM is kind of saying, oh, did we do that? Did we people might stop buying our cars if they know we're selling their data and raising their insurance rates because they drive like maniacs. Maybe we shouldn't do that.
It's a valuable program if people know that it exists, if they can opt into it. If you believe you're a good driver and you say, hey, look, you know, insurance, you should knock off $50 a month from my rates because I do drive safely. That is a great use of this technology. But someone not knowing, not having any clue, not having any ability to opt in, and then just getting the larger bill, that's always a bad use of this technology, regardless of whatever action it is that they're taking, that maybe we do want to nudge away from it.
Absolutely. The insurance providers, you can download their app, and if you don't break real hard, if you don't do jackrabbit starts and you don't speed, and they can see, hey, you're a pretty safe driver and can offer you all kind of discounts because of that, that's cool. If you drive like a maniac, you don't want the insurance companies to know what you're doing. I get that. But you're opting into that system, just like you were saying, as opposed to the, oh, by the way.
And I think this is a good model to generally understand our data. I would much rather be able to opt in and be the person who is selling my data as opposed to having a third party sell my data without my knowledge. Because that's ultimately what you're doing. Whenever you're going to the insurance company and saying, hey, look how much of a safe driver I am, lower my rates, you are selling your data to them. And so that's the difference here, is that GM was the one profiting off of this versus you, the individual, profiting off of this.
Moving on from GM, let's talk about Uber and how, once again, facial recognition software doesn't work and now is causing a racially discriminatory lawsuit that Uber's going to have to pay a lot of money for.
Yep. This is, we've talked time and time and time again, and you would think that at some point in time, either facial recognition would get better or people would be smarter about how it's implemented. But this came out in 2021, and this was a man who was working for Uber Eats, and in order to sign into the app, you had to do facial recognition, and Microsoft powered the app, and after careful consideration, they said his account would be removed due to continued mismatches. It simply could not look at his face and tell who he was.
And oh, by the way, he was a black man, and as we have pointed out multiple times, facial recognition software is not working well for black people, and it's a problem. It's not that facial recognition software is racist, it's just not being programmed or set up or configured with enough test cases to work yet. And until we get there, it's going to continue to be a problem.
Yeah. And so these are a lot of the challenges that artificial intelligence faces. Because ultimately what facial recognition is it's a branch of machine learning. And the way that machine learning works is you feed it a very large amount of data in, and it sits there and it makes all the connections inside the data for itself, and then it produces an output. Well, if all the data that you put into it only has white faces into it, it's not going to know what to do with black faces. And this is a lot of the problem that machine learning faces, is what is your training data made of? Is your training data representative? Does your training data have enough different categories of whatever it is that you're trying to do inside of it so that it can capture every test case? And, you know, Google, whenever they created their generative AI, went too far the other way. And that is another reason why this is really hard, is that people are really diverse. We have a lot of different types of people, and people's identities are important to them. It's one thing you say, oh, that's a dog. You know, that dog is 20% terrier and 30% retriever. The dog doesn't really know, but people know and people care, and you have to get their identities right.
LinkedIn has decided they're going to start incorporating games onto their social media platform so that you will be able to compete in games against your friends and colleagues. And I just think this is a really bad idea.
Oh, I agree. This reminds me of Facebook in 2015, that Facebook used to have games on it, and they were always felt low quality. They always felt cheap. No one whose opinion that I valued was spending a lot of time playing Facebook games. And especially when I go to LinkedIn, the platform explicitly for finding the opinion of people who I trust because of their domain knowledge, I don't care if they're good at solitaire as well.
The idea that LinkedIn, which is the professional social media platform, LinkedIn is where you're posting stories of interest to your industry, where you're looking to find who works for that business. If all of a sudden now as a business, I've got to make a decision, well, do I let LinkedIn on my network now, or do I start blocking it because I don't want my employees playing video games? That's the whole reason why a lot of businesses block Netflix or block any other type of gaming that's going to allow them to goof off or not be productive. If LinkedIn is going to go down that path, it's going to put them in a much lower category as far as credibility, in my opinion. And I think this is a really, really dumb idea.
I 100% agree. I think this is the case of a company not understanding what its core identity is, not understanding what its core value is. And they are trying to optimize for how can we keep people on the site as long as possible. And they're going to trade their reputation. They're going to sell their credibility in order to maybe keep people on the website a little bit longer so they can sell them a couple more ads. And this has been the death of other, you know, social media platforms, has been the death of other websites, that you go to that website to do a thing, a very specific thing that they do fantastically right now. They are the only category, the only person in this category. And if you start to, once you open that up, how much other goofiness do you allow on the platform that just completely ruins what you have?
For the same reason, when you go to LinkedIn, you don't see people posting pictures of what they're eating for dinner. You don't see people posting pictures of goofy things. You see business there. You see industry there. You see technical journals, technical things, people talking about, hey, this is what's going on with my business.
People posting their achievements or their accomplishments. Yes.
It's about being professional on this site. Why lower that? Why sink into we want to be more like Facebook. We want to be more like some of the goofier. No, don't do that.
And that's the incredible part to me about this, is it's not even like Facebook today. Facebook also realized that these things are not worth it, and games is no longer a significant part of the Facebook platform for a reason. If this really worked, if this was drawing people to Facebook, if they thought it was a valuable product, it would still be prominently featured.
This just really, like, you hit the nail on the head when you said this is a platform that is not understanding who they are and why people go there. They're trying to open up another category, and this is a category that they shouldn't be going after. And you're just going to just destroy the reputation and value that you've built.
And it's because companies are forced to always increase their retention times. They have certain metrics. They have, you know, how long do people spend on the platform? How much engagement do they create? All these types of metrics. And that my guess is that LinkedIn is a mature platform, that they're really not doing a whole lot. They don't have a lot of initiatives to drive that time up because it is what it is. But the problem is that you can't just be great at what you are. You have to always be growing. You have to always be increasing your daily active users or monthly active users. You have to always be increasing your screen time. You have to always be increasing all of these metrics. Otherwise, your company is considered stagnant and it's no longer, your stock is no longer going up. Your stock is now going down. And so they're forced to try new things. They're forced to experiment. And sometimes you experiment and it goes badly.
We want to thank General Informatics for sponsoring our show. General Informatics is an information technology firm with a mission to make our clients even more successful through the best use of technology. Based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, General Informatics is a premier IT managed service provider delivering exceptional managed IT solutions to a diverse base of customers across the southeastern United States. From the beginning, we have maintained our commitment to meeting the growing needs of our clients through continuous innovation. With over 20 years of experience and a team of 180 plus employees, including technicians, engineers, program designers, GI has evolved to become the leading IT partner of business schools and government agencies. Our managed services teams can run your digital infrastructure or support your team on an on-demand basis, letting you focus on your business strengths. This has become a proven formula, so proven that 98% of our clients continue to do business with us year after year. Whether you need IT services, new technology, or have a question, visit us on the web at geninf.com.
If you enjoyed our show today, we are here on Talk 107.3 FM every Saturday at 4 p.m. and the show reruns Sundays also at 4 p.m. If you missed any part of the show or you'd like to hear this or previous episodes, check out our podcast available on almost every podcast platform, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, and more. When you're there, be sure to subscribe so you get notified every time we post a new episode. If you like our show or you have any suggestions, let us know on our website at www.techgumbo.net. Thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.